Well, this is History Week, as you know, and what better way to celebrate than to sit back and to listen to Barry Dickens weave his magic. A quintessential northern suburbs man, Barry was born in Reservoir in 1949, and he's been an ambassador of the suburb ever since. Barry is not afraid to tackle any area of the written word, as you probably already know. He's written children's books, short stories, fiction of all kinds, biography, memoir, and he's written for performing arts too. He's written, in fact, something like 10 plays, been associated with La Mama Theatre, and the most recent of his plays has always been of interest to me, Remembering Ronald Ryan, something that I'll never forget because at the time of the escape and his subsequent hanging, my family was living only metres away from the drama that was being played inside and outside the Bluestone walls. Barry's 2009, or it might be 2008 memoir, I'm not sure which year it was published. I don't suppose you remember? No. Okay. Unparalleled Sorrow is now followed by what I call a genre-defying new book. Now, just what is fantasy? And what is history? And does it matter? Whatever the case... Oh, there you go, I got a response. Whatever the case, we're in for a magical ride. Nearly 30 years ago, Barry published his first collection of short stories called The Gift of the Gab, and nothing could better sum up our guest speaker today, who's here to tell us about his latest book, Barry and the Fairies of Miller Street. So will you please join me in welcoming Barry Dickens as he takes us back to 1953 and his Nan and Pop's home in Miller Street, West Preston.
That's a great intro. Hands up who can hear and who can see. And who can raise the dead? Oh, that's right, as long as you can hear. I'm very pleased to be your guest. And the point to the recollection that is the Fairies of Miller Street is to capture, as honestly as I possibly could, descriptions of West Preston, where I was grateful to be, I guess, educated by my grandmother. And I lived in Reservoir. I've often joked that I lived in Reservoir deliberately, but... That's not really the case. I've loved Reservoir and mocked it in equal measure. And I guess a lot of writers satirise where they're from and love where they're from simultaneously. My mother is still alive by a whisker. She's very sick indeed, and I saw her only yesterday. So she's... Edna's heading for 90 on the 2nd of December. She's very, very ill. And my brother John, 67, looking after her at the old home that I was born in Reservoir. Whenever it was holidays, I went to stay with my Nan, as we called my... We called our grandmother Nan. Of course, there were two Nans. There was Mamie, who lived in Amos Street, Carlton. That was Edna's mother, Mamie. Her real name was Mary, but she called herself Mamie to be more interesting and to be fascinating at every chance. Mamie used to assault her piano. My first memory is of her assaulting the piano rather than playing the keyboard. And you will play, she used to say to the piano, and beat the poor keys until April showers arrived. And then I only saw her husband once. That was my maternal grandfather, Gus. I saw him for about a minute when I was two, and I still remember that minute. I've never written about that minute, but I can remember everything within that minute. Gus Toll, his name was. He was Scandinavian Jewish. My grandmother, Mamie, was Jewish, so I'm a Jew too, thank God. And at least you get that for nothing. And then I remember seeing Gus up on a roof at 44 Amos Street, Carlton, in 1950, when I was two, and he was engaged in the act of shattering his false dentures with a hammer because they annoyed him. I loved him at once for doing that. I saw the teeth in a shower of tiny bits of pink plastic. So that's the only recollection I have of my Uncle Gus. I think it's a wonderful thing to do to your own teeth. Every holiday, as I say, I was taken down to my other grandmother's place at 22 Miller Street. And that's where the title of my new book comes from, Barry and the Fairies of Miller Street. And my grandfather, the other grandfather, his name was Arthur. That was the last house that he built. It was a two-bedroom weatherboard place on the corner of Davies Street and Miller Street, West Preston. And that's where I met the fairies, and that's where my grandmother made sure I met them. She was, what can I say, exactly 66 years older than myself, born on the same day. I saw her as this incredibly friendly presence. I guess I confused her, as all children do, with good. She stood for good, in my opinion. She was some sort of embodiment of kindness and friendliness and unafraid of anything. And she wasn't a Christian. She was a free thinker. And she only went to grade two. She was only educated so far as grade two at Northcote Primary School in Helen Street. And we once went there together, my nan and I. She showed me her signature in the book, where she and her brother signed in as children. Didn't get far at school, she said, grade two, and that was it. And then she went to work at the age of nine in the machine shops of North Fitzroy. She walked 3.5 miles to and from work every morning. And, so I grew up with the work ethic, as it was called, the love of work and earning your own money. My grandmother wasn't very talkative. She was incredibly fit, even when, like, she was 60. She could order a bag of cement and a bag of shale and lift up a bag of shale and a bag of cement in the same hand. And a bag of Geelong cement, what would that weigh? I don't know, but Nan would say, well, do you want it over there or over there? And she could shift a bag of cement with one hand. So luckily for me, I grew up with a really physically strong woman. I loved listening to what she had to say. So far as the fairies went, I can remember, and this isn't in my book, which I haven't got. I gave it to the librarian today at the school where I'm teaching. Forgot to bring it. But I remember my grandmother sitting next to a Daphne bush near the front gate that opened up into Davy Street. I would have been three. The memory is as vivid as you people here, as sharp as you people here, you friendly people here. And, I think I was leaning against a bush or the root of a bush or something. Something itchy I was resting against. I'm sure it was itchy. And this is sounding like a seance, isn't it? But it's not meant to be. I'd like to take you all back to 1952, if you'll come with me. Anyway, my grandmother was talking about fairies and where she'd seen a couple of them. And she said they tend to go shopping for fruit early in the morning. Fairies do. And they like a bargain or two, and they go over to Mario's Fruit Supply in High Street, Preston, as it turns out. That's where I've seen the fairies. And we might go there soon and see if we can bump into a couple of them. And down at my feet, my childish feet, I caught her drawing fairy footsteps. And she was tracing footsteps into hard sand around the bottom of the tap. And there was like the artwork of footsteps was there. And I saw her doing this. She was incising like a minuet, like a dancing picture for me. And I thought, she's forging fairy footsteps, or possibly forging them. And she said, look there, she said. And this is a recollection that's vivid. She said, they've been dancing there right while we were talking. Because what fairies do is they distract you. You can't think when they're there. And that's what they intend. And look, there's one that's been dancing with one foot. See there? And I said, Nan, you just put your finger there. I never did, she said. That's all in your mind. And if I was frightened of the wind or frightened of something, temporarily, of course, I wasn't a frightened child, as a matter of fact. Nan would come into the spare room and tell me stories and do sounds like the wind and why fairies like the wind and why they trust the wind and how things fly and how it's possible to live forever if you're a fairy. Until my eyelashes were shut and then I was fast asleep. So she was terribly patient and friendly. And then a sister of hers named Bessie moved in when I was about seven. And Bess was a fully paid up member of the Noble Park branch of the Australian Communist Party. And that's the first time I heard of Stalin, was when I was seven. So my father used to clash with Bess politically because he was on the side of the coalition. And there was Bess quoting from Das Kapital. I enjoyed Bess's company. Bess usually stayed in the spare room. In the background of this history is my grandfather, Arthur, in that tiny house in West Preston that Arthur built. He was dying of a rapid rate from emphysema because he, like a lot of boys in those days, they smoked when they were young, and he used to have these horrifying coughing attacks into the concrete trough of our laundry. Of all the words that I adore, my favourite word of the 10 million Australian words, or English words, is the word trough. To me, there's nothing as real as the word trough. Go and do it in the trough was a favourite working class epithet. Right in the trough, there's the boy. And you understood the importance of the concrete trough. And poor old Pop, my beautiful grandfather, having these coughing spasms in West Preston. And I can remember him shuddering, his body convulsing with these terrible coughs. And there I was at one stage, I got on his back as if I didn't know what to do because I loved him so much. And I remember holding his braces on his pants as if I was a little jockey trying to ride Pop into the trough, you know. And amongst the coughing, he said, "That is unhelpful when you do that." So I can remember tiny quotations, and the quotations come out of love for the subject matter, which is my family. It's the detail that I love so much, and the fragrance of that Daphne bush, that particular one, and the smell of wet cement or sand, even something as common as sand. You know that you're alive if you can smell sand, and raindrops on footpaths. And my grandmother used to say, when we ran down to the fish and chip shop, "Never run on a crack of that footpath there, Barry, because a lion will spring out of it." And I used to think that was true, that a lion would. Remember being told that a lion would leap out of a footpath crack? So she was full of stories and mysteries, and full of common sense too. Sometimes I stayed there too long, and I felt a bit duped about that, you know, that I'm there for the holidays. But after 4 or 5 days, that was too long with her and her sister and Pop gasping away in the spare room, still smoking. And she'd come in and glare at him. And he'd say to me, "I can't handle those glares. I'll have to give up the smokes." She glares at me like that. She glares at me with such force she causes a downdraft. And Pop said that to me, and I remember it. When she was angry, her eyebrows used to flap, causing a downdraft. She loved Vicks. Remember Vicks vapor rub? Hands up who remembers Vicks. She used to put a tiny bit up each nostril. I thought it was the most repellent fragrance. So like it reminded me of eucalyptus and death at the same time. A little drop of Vicks will do you good. It's all to do with home cures, you know, home cures and remedies. And then not much she could do about Pop though. She defiantly smoked in the little shed up the backyard. He was full of fun though, and used to kick the football to me. And he took me around West Preston, down Davy Street into Oakover Road. And I thought, Oakover Road, isn't that a beautiful word, you know? I guess when I was 5 I was collecting words, as if collecting pretty stamps in a jar. Oakover Road, you know. I was already kissed in the brain as a poet, because I'd walk around uttering the words that I adored, Oakover Road. And the detail of the conversations was coming back. West Preston was full of bacon factories. Hutton's Bacon was in, do you remember Hutton's? What was the saying for Hutton's?
Hutton's.
Don't argue.
Hutton's.
Can you all say that to me? It'll give me a lift, I can tell you. On the count of 3. 1, 2, 3. Don't argue. Hutton's. And didn't the artwork show someone stopping someone from talking? Leather factories in Preston. Howe's Leather. Brian Howe, the deputy Labor leader, was a Howe, or Howe's Leather. Footballs were made in West Preston. I used to go with my nan past the Platypus Imitation Cricket Ball Factory. Imitation Cricket Ball Factory. Platypus were a firm that made what were called composite cricket balls. And they were in Plenty Road. It was a ball you couldn't really hit. It was like hitting a Pontiac potato, in a way. And a lovely red finish, a beautiful red lacquer finish. But when children clouted it with the cricket bat, It elongated. The ball elongated in a rather hopeless fashion. So I grew up with all those factories around me. Preston was... What's that?
And the pottery.
And the pottery, that's right. What street was that in?
I'd have been in Oakover Road.
Oakover Road, of course. How could I overlook that? And then the most important thing of all, as a child went, was where they made the trams.
Yes.
The tram, great tram factory. That was a continuation of Miller Street that went up what was called the Hump. Any of you, you look as if some of you have been up the Hump.
Yeah.
Walk up the Hump was a fair walk in the old days. So the city tram, the West Preston tram, the number 48, chugged down St George's Road, about 6 miles from the city, and went up the Hump, rather a steep ascent, and down into East Preston, where I think you're from. You look like you're from East Preston.
Yeah. What I used to catch to work.
The number 48.
Wasn't there an east and a west?
With the prongs going up under the thing. And, yeah. And Nan, my Nan used to... I guess I'm like her because my grandmother would notice everything. And so no wonder I've turned out to be a writer when I think of what she was like. One night going over the Hump, you know, I didn't want to go over the Hump. It was cold and inclement weather. And she said, come, we're going for the Hump. I'm restless, let's have a walk. And I was about 5, so I had to go trotting along with her, though I wasn't restless. I wanted to talk to my teddy bear. Over the Hump we went. This is 1955, opposite where the trams are made, the Melbourne and Metropolitan Board of Works, it was called. All the W-class trams being made. There's Nan on the apex of the Hump, right up high where birds are landing, and all sorts of birds used to land up there. There's actually an observation tower you can climb onto. You look down on West Preston. And Nan looked up at the dark skies, pitch black heavens, opposite the Clifton Brickworks, Clifton Idea Bricks. And so still and quiet it was. And there's my beautiful old grandmother. She's 65 or something. Fit as a fiddle, though. And the wind is pushing around and worrying her hair. And she looks up at the night sky and she said, leaning on the fence in the most relaxed fashion, and the trolley there with a brick behind it so it doesn't roll. And she said, you know, I like the dark. It's so cheap. And I thought, she's right, it is cheap. The night is incredibly cheap, isn't it? It just was such an odd thing to say, I like the night. I like the dark. Paused. It's so cheap. As if it's a garment that you're unfolding. So I thought that was a great dissertation on eternity, really. And then another thing I'd like to tell you was that 1954 was the year the Royals came here. Hands up who remembers the Royals coming to Melbourne. 1954, was it springtime or... About September, I think.
Yeah, I think it was towards
now. All the worshippers of the Queen had hay fever, so it must have been springtime. I was coming down the Hump, as per usual, with my grandmother, with a trolley that had lard down the bottom. Remember lard? She'd buy a couple of pounds of lard. Quinces? Because
yeah.
She made quince jelly. Remember quince jelly? All the soft stuff up the top, the dozen eggs and Cresta biscuits. She used to buy Cresta biscuits and... self-raising flour. Even that seemed magical to me, as if it could lift up, as if it was like Lazarus, could come back from the dead, self-raising flour. You know, rose up from the bottom of the McAlpin's bag. And we're going down towards the Board of Works. It's a phosphorescent, sulphurous pong of smokestacks. And they're all working on the night shift at the tram depot. We used to call it a depot, that really was a factory. That awful smell of phosphorus and bright burning lights and choking, gagging, toxic smells. And Nan looked down the path, the rocky path. It was a very steep descent. And it's the most excited I've ever seen her in my life. She said, look, it's them. I recognise the Bentley. And it was the royal family. You know, I recognise the Bentley, she said. And we went down there to talk to the Queen of our country, Queen Elizabeth and Phil and Charles, who was 5 then, or 6, 1954, he would have been six. Princess Anne, the poor thing is looking at wheels being made at the tram depot. And this is true, my grandmother, I had stamina grey cotton school shorts. I was a very shy little boy and skinny in those days. And I saw the Queen, I didn't know how to, she looked like some sort of mystical queen with gold, you know, things I was sort of seeing. My grandmother, quite rudely I thought, pushed me towards her. She pushed me towards the Queen of our country. I was put out that she pushed me. I think I went towards her bread basket. And there was no security there, just people. And they were, the poor royals were having a tour, a forced tour of the Board of Works. I mean, the poor things. Watching wheels and brake linings being formed. And chains being lifted up and things coming out of the drop forwards. And poor Prince Philip's eyes watering. Like, oh, really, this is where they make the wheels. His eyes were watering. And you know what my nan said to the Queen? Can you guess? Without a jot of shyness, she said, "Ma'am," with a gesture, "I'd like to introduce you to Barry of West Preston." And I had to go out in my little cotton shorts, and I didn't know what to do, so I pulled them out and curtsied to her. And then I think I cried. And that was how I met the Queen, in that strange moment. And then we went back to her place and we had our porridge and things like that. So when I was 11, my grandmother took me to Sydney, and that changed my life. I'd never been to Sydney before. I was living at my parents' place in Rathcown Road Reservoir, about 6 miles from West Preston. Nothing out there but hay fever, as my mother used to say. If you want hay fever, you'll live in Reservoir. Yeah, she used to hate Persil. There was a brand of clothes washing detergent called Persil. Do you remember that? P-E-R-S-I-L. It always gave my mum bronchitis and asthma. They didn't really get on that well, my grandmother and my mother. I was aware of that as a little boy, that there was a certain tension between them. And she adored my dad so much, she must have thought that no one was good enough for him. So I just used to think what a strange feeling is in the room, you know. And ever since I've been young, I can remember atmospheres. You know, I guess all writers are interested in atmospheres. The mood of a room, you know, you go into a room, you know the mood straight away. Whether it's relaxing or leisurely or fraught with all sorts of undercurrents. But as I say, when I was 11, my grandmother rang me at Reservoir. It's my first phone call. Big, heavy, black Bakelite telephone. It connected to my father's printing shop. So when it rang, you had to pick it up and be very polite because it could be an order for his print. He was a commercial printer. And we had to, in those days, in the 50s, be perfectly polite all the time. If the phone rang, my dad'd say, it might be an order, so you watch how you talk on the phone. So we all had to say, "Dickens residence, how can we assist?" We were babies, you know, babies of five or six, climbing on top of each other to be polite on the telephone. Barrett, 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 used to burr the phone. "Dickens residence, how can we assist?" And then it was Nan, it was Gertrude. "Is that Barry?" And I went to the phone. It was a big, heavy, as I said, black, heavy phone, not like the plastic they have now. "It's me," she said. I knew who that was in a second. I loved her that well, I knew exactly what she's going to say. She said, "How would you like to wag school and come to Sydney with me?" What a fantastic honour that would be, to wag school. It sounded like anarchy to me, to wag school. So I loved my school. It was Keon Park Primary School. So the next morning, I wagged school, a bit hesitant. But she took me to the Southern Cross Railway Station. She looked so pretty. And she had her hair done in some sort of a... She'd made it curly. My grandmother's hair was straight and white, like mine, I suppose. But ladies of her generation who grew up in the Depression used to tint their hair with tea and used to wind brown paper strips into tea, black tea, and set it like a perm. Go to bed at night next to their sister to keep warm. They'd say to the sister, "Where do you reckon you're going?" "I'm freezing." So there would be my sister and my grandmother curled up like Bill and Coo, the pigeons. And I could smell the sweet scent of tea and the lovely fragrance of her natural white hair, you know. But in the morning it was curly. And she used to pull the little bits of brown paper out to make a curl, like tie-dye. Off to Sydney we went. I'd never been there before. And she's so fit. She's 65 years old, 4'9", and strong, just so strong. The first night we got to Sydney, she walked over the bridge with me, with her bags. And we can do that, can't we? Oh, okay. We stayed at Cronulla at one of her sister's places. And her sister had a lover. And I knew that. I could tell by the way they were carrying on together. But he was called the boarder. The boarder. He looked too happy to be a boarder to me. His name was Ted Hurst, the boarder. He was a lovely old bloke. And he took me to the Sydney Cricket Ground when I was about 11 with Nan. Took Nan too to the cricket. And that was the first time I'd ever heard the word shout. I didn't know what that meant. Shout. And Ted said to Gert and I, it's my shout, I'll take you to the cricket. I didn't know what shout meant, because my dad didn't really shout. Money was too hard to get. So we went to the cricket. Ted Hurst was probably 70, very good looking guy. My auntie's lover, too happy to be a boarder. So my grandmother had this way of making everything special. When we lived in that little house in Miller Street, she was incredibly strict about everything. Never a speck of dust on everything. She was never angry. I never saw her angry. I never saw my father angry. They both were teetotal. They both never swore. And yet they were godless. And I've always believed in God. I believed that God is love when I was at Sunday school. I still do. I still think God is love. And God hasn't got a human manifestation. But it's a spirit of love. That's always been my feeling. Anyway, very strict, very everything crisp and hopeful. When she wrapped up a Christmas present, it was beautifully wrapped. Not rough and the sticky tape rough, everything. Christmas cards beautifully lettered. She'd say to me conspiratorially, when I was 5, if you're a good boy, one day you'll live in West Preston. I didn't know how to take that. Had an air of threat to me. But I've got to say about West Preston, I always felt that it was for me. When I teach poetry, this morning I've been teaching poetry in a Catholic girls' school out in Baldwin. It's called All Hallows Catholic Girls. It's a beautiful school. And I tell the Year 9 girls that poetry is for you. That it was invented just for you. And never mind Yeats and all the great poets, you're much better than they are. That's my way of contributing to education, that you must never say it's only me. You mustn't say it's only me writing. It's only me talking. My grandmother tutored me in two things. One is the arts, because she said to me, unfortunately, you look like you're going to be an artist. Always remember, she said, no matter how old you live to be, Barry, my boy, no one is better than you are. And if you believe that, you'll do exactly as you please in life. And if you want to write, who's to stop you? Who's to stop you except your own hand putting the pen down? Now, that's pretty good advice, isn't it? I was 8 or 9 when she said that. So it's all homespun, but it had a certain amount of vigour, you'd have to say. And she was a great writer too, my grandmother. Hands up who remembers aerograms. Aerograms? Kate, remember aerograms? They were fourpence when I was a little kid. You bought them at the post office. You needed a fair bit of slag to put around the edges because they had some sort of mucilage thing. And you could write a really long epistle on one, a letter. Well, my grandmother, Gert, loved writing on aerograms. Always beavering away with a Biros came out about 1954, I think, and she loved ballpoint pens, you know. How do they get the little ball in there with all that ink on? There must be little men that climb down the nib. What amazing what the Japanese come up with, she said. I didn't know the Japanese invented Biros. Of course they did. They're little men and they get down into the pen. So she had a way of making things into fun. And she'd write these long, long letters to her sister Bessie, who lived in Noble Park. Now, the whole point of an aerogram, surely, is that you send it overseas on what was called onion paper, because it's so light. And that you could open up an aerogram to like a yard wide. And there's my grandmother's handwriting. Excuse me if I laugh. But it's the recollection of her harmless eccentricity that drives the laughter. Tiny, tiny thoughts written in a tiny, tiny hand. And beautifully phrased. What a teacher of English would say, excellently paragraphed. And there would be Bess at the other end, you know, reading it in her fibrous plaster slum in Noble Park. One bedroom slum she lived in, because my Uncle Wal never went to work. And Bess was kept in fantastic poverty all her life. I could write a book of 200,000 words about my Auntie Bess, what poverty did to her. Yeah, my Uncle Wal used to lie in bed all day if it was raining. She'd get up and work if it was raining. That was the difference between them. Pop, my father Pop, said to me once, the difference between Wal and Bess is that Bess never knows when to stop work and Wal never knows when to start. Isn't it great that a man would trust a boy of 7? That's something I love about people, that you trust someone maybe 60 years younger. I am excited to talk about people I love dearly, that's all, and the geography of those memories. And I've only got to go back to Davy Street and Miller Street, and the memories just absolutely pour in. When I wrote the book, Barry and the Fairies of Miller Street, the best writing was done walking along the footpath, just with a notebook. And I believe that writing out of history comes geographically, that when your feet are in the spot where the stories happen, it pours back. You can't stop it. You're drenched with dialogue, exactly as something was phrased and said and murmured. If your feet are where they once were 57 years ago, or 60, the years don't matter. It's the geography of where you are. And I'm getting a bit preachy for myself. But about, that's how it is with me. Reservoir has got pine trees between Region and Reservoir Station. There's a whole lot of... They're actually condemned, which is very upsetting for me. I love those pine trees. Darabin Council intend to pull them all down, and I'm very upset about that. Because when I was young, I grew up among those pine trees. That's where we played. My brother John and I used to get up the pine trees to try and get eagle eggs out of the nests. Sometimes Ma Eagle would turn up. You had to think quickly then. But anyway, that little house is still there at 22 Miller Street. It's been refurbished into an obscene conglomerate of vinyl angles. There's nothing of Pop or Nan there except two things, and they're concrete numbers that he made. He made the numbers 22 out of cement, and they are on the chimney, 22. And Pop made, I saw him make those concrete numbers with a mould, and the rest of the house is a vinyl atrocity, but the 22 is still ours. And the blades of grass in the nature strip are as they were when Nan and Bess used to mow the lawn together. On either side of the push-pull mower, I saw them sometimes. Come on, get on the other side. And I'd do the push-pull mower, the old qual-cast iron. They're very heavy, you know. Come on, put your guts into your part of it and we'll get to the gutter. Back and forward and both ways, you know. The last story to tell you about my grandmother, because there are billions of them I'd love to share with you. Have you enjoyed the stories of my grandmother? That's great. Is when she was 99, my father said to me, it's your turn to do Nan's dinner. You go down and do Nan's dinner. You can do her a shepherd's pie, because she refused Meals on Wheels. You know what she used to do with the Meals on Wheels? Used to bury them. Near the Daphne bush was where they went. And my dad would say, did you get Meals on Wheels last night, Nan? Yeah, I got them. Yeah, well, did you eat them? No, they're safe, though. She stuck up a hole behind the Daphne bush and that's where all their Meals on Wheels went. Anyway, this is true. I went down Davy Street off Oak Ava Road, West Preston. The spiritual nub of West Preston, I'm talking about. Go past the nature strip. It's really foggy and it's dark. And Nan's 99 and I'm like 49. And it's my turn to feed her. She lived in that house until she was 100. And you know what? She was there 10:30 at night, bent over on the nature strip. An old lady of 99 bent over with extreme curvature of the spine, gasping underneath a cement bag. She pulled half a bag of cement up and got it under her own back. And then she's buggered because she can't go anywhere. And that's what I've seen as one of her grandsons. A woman of 99, marooned on the nature strip with a great big heavy weight on her back, which is a cement bag. She wanted to have a go at making a new patio. And she's pulled the cement bag, half of it, by those, you know, the ears of the bag. Oi, 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 and managed to drag it up onto her own spine where it rested. So I thought, God, how, she's so strong to have done that. You know, what a moronic thing to do, though, you know. So I went over there and had to sort of lie under her so I could have eye contact with her. And she's gasping under the weight. Of course she is. I say, Nan, what are you doing there? She said, oh, well, the only way I could do the patio was to pick this up. Eventually I'm going to have to put it down, aren't I? Anyway, she made the, with the sand and the trowel, she did the patio. Anyway, I better stop or we'll go on forever. Thanks very much.
Thank you, Barry. Well, perhaps you've never been to West Preston or a reservoir in reality, but as Barry has said, he's interested in the details of life and the mood and the atmosphere of places. And I think you'll agree with me that today we've all found ourselves there in West Preston and reservoir in the 1950s, along with Barry and his nan and his pop, but especially his nan. Just the sort of nan every child should have, I think. And today we've been privileged to hear about the influence of an extraordinary woman living in what might otherwise be seen as a very ordinary suburb by a man who really knows how to tell a story. Before we go to questions, because I know some of you do have to leave, I would ask you to join me in thanking Barry Dickens for telling us about his life.
Thank you.
And I think also I've been thinking about the Pine Streets and Reservoir. It suddenly reminded me that in the very early 1970s as a university student, I lived in a street called Pine Street Reservoir.
Did you? Yeah.
Yeah, so there you go. I've forgotten all about it until that very moment. And I can't for the life of me remember whether there were pine trees there, but I guess there were. Okay, now, but I do remember the tram depot, because I used to get the East Preston tram, and that's where we went in. Didn't always look carefully at which tram you were getting on, and if you go on the wrong one, you're going in the wrong direction. So plenty of roads a long way away went at night time, and you get on the wrong tram. Anyway, who has a question for Barry, or a comment?
Well, Barry didn't mention his artistic endeavours too, and I'm lucky enough to have this book, which I've had a very long time, called My Grandmother, and the illustrations of his too, and there's a little record goes with it, and I've got two grandchildren and I've played it many times.
Well, that's the most popular book I ever did.
That with the record?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is the record the telling of the story?
Yeah, Penguin.
It's Barry.
The ABC got me to read the story.
I have a question. Any ideas of putting anything into musical form?
I'd like to write a musical about my grandmother.
Yeah.
I'd like to, with songs and the birds singing, everything
You've
singing.
Got the material there, haven't you?
Yeah. That is just the more, you know, the more stories I think of, the more there are. Just she really goes on forever. And as for the advice about being a writer, you know, you're the only one who can stop yourself. Well, that's just priceless to be told that, because it is so hard to be a writer for a living. I've won every prize you can win in our country, and I'm really battling because it's so hard. You know, we don't look after our own writers, and there's probably a half a dozen writers in our country who can do the mortgage out of their writing, I can tell you. So.
And I like the story of your grandmother. She used to have a pair of men's pants hanging on the line.
So burglars thought a guy was living there, that's right. And she put a brick in the gate. And I said, what's the brick in the gate for? Well, if it drags, I think a burglar's coming at them, aren't they?
Barry, did you ever publish all your columns in the Melbourne Times about the famous Roy Boys?
Alan and Unwin published them, called You'll Only Go In For Your Mates. It was published in Sydney, and in 1991, all of my profane football stories were published. I really miss working for the Melbourne Times. I had a great time there and had encouragement like my grandmother gave me to go further. And Glenn Rowan, that's his real name, Glenn Rowan, who owned the Melbourne Times, he said to me, he said, you can be ruder. You can be a lot ruder. So he wanted it to be provocative and go further. But
you and Frank Strawn were legends.
Well, it was great fun, although Glenn made me the opera reviewer once. I didn't want to do that because I don't understand opera. I love it, but without any knowledge. And I looked into my pay bag, what we call contrib bags. You contribute it to the paper, it's called a contrib bag. And there was just a button in it, like a $2 coin. And I'd reviewed Traviata for the Melbourne Times. Even with the flu, I saw it and reviewed it. But I said, Glenn, as I shook the little button out of the pay bag, that rattled on his desk, $2 is not much for a review of La Traviata. He said, yeah, but I hate opera. So you've got an independent.
You've got to know and love football, and you've got to know and love music. Did your gran or your grandpa?
Now, that really is my mother, the musical thing, because Edna, who can't sing now, which is a great pity, was always singing in the house, and she hated housework, as women should hate housework, and used to sing all the time and do impressions of people, which were really good impressions of people. You know. She could even impersonate me if she felt like it. But I grew up in that sort of musical household where singing was perfectly natural. You don't hear people singing much anymore, but when I was young, men used to sing on the way to work. I mean, you just can't imagine that now. Everyone's on iPhone now, and what iPhone's done that's bad is people can't talk to each other anymore. You know you can't talk because they're using...
What were you saying before about your nan used to notice things?
That's
right.
My
father was like that. He noticed everything, and he always drew my attention to everything. And now with everybody vagged out on their headphones and so on...
But it's a real offence. It's an offence to talk to someone.
Yeah.
People are... Well, that's why we're becoming isolates. You know, what could be more natural than talking to someone? You can't talk to someone with an iPhone and say, could you pull that out of your head and I'll try and get through to you? You know, you can't.
Well, being not a football fan, go back to the football. Where did you observe football?
Well, I used to go with my dad to Preston at Cramer Street Oval and see the mighty Preston Bull Ants. And we'd beat Williamstown and...
Did you have brothers as well?
Three brothers. We've still got...
All
played footy and cricket. It was a really normal family. And a happy family, you've got to say. And a boisterous one. It's full of ideas and everybody talking. And Len, our father, didn't like it if you fell silent at the tea table. Now, he'd be tired. He'd work a 12-hour shift at the printing factory from 6 to 6, and then he'd take an hour to get all the ink off him. He'd sit all scrubbed up at the tea table and I'd be 7 or 8 and he'd say, what happened today? I was so shy, I didn't know what... He said, you don't get your result till you tell me a story. Oh, it's all too hard. Come on, you must have done something today. He wanted everyone to talk. I thought that was a great father. Don't get your result till you tell me a story. Blackmail, I thought. Anyway, it's really nice to see you all and your happy faces. So thanks for making me so welcome. Thank you.